it's a kind of a transition here. Because this discussion about how the modes of goodness are manifested from him, he says, although these are in me, I'm not under the modes of nature. So then he begins to discuss how the modes of nature work, and how those can overcome, how those who surrender to him can overcome these modes. So that's the next section, big, the long section. So let's start with that. Any questions about not only so far in this chapter? Okay, so let's start with text 14. Tripir Kundamayar Bhavayar
Tripir Kundamayar Bhavayar
Edi Sarvam Nidam Jagat
Edi Sarvam Nidam Jagat
Mokhitam Napi Janati
Mokhitam Napi Janati
Gunamaya, consisting of the gunas, bhavai, by the states of being, in all these sarvam, all idam, this jagat universe, mohitam, deluded, na abhijanati, does not know, ma, me, Abhyaha, above these, param, the supreme, abhyayam, inexhaustible. Translation. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance,
the whole world does not know me,
above the modes and inexhaustible. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The whole world is enchanted by the three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to this material nature is the Supreme Lord Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three material modes of nature. Those who are purely in the mode of goodness are called Brahmins. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called Kshatriyas. Those who are in the modes of both passion and ignorance are called Vaishyas. Those who are completely in ignorance are called Shudras. And those who are less than that are animals or animal life. However, these designations are not permanent. I may either be a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or whatever. In any case, this life is temporary. But although life is temporary, and we do not know what we are going to be in the next life, by the spell of this illusory energy, we consider ourselves in terms of this bodily conception of life, and we thus think that we are American, Indian, Russian, or Brahmana, Hindu, Muslim, etc. And if we become entangled with the modes of material nature, then we forget the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is behind all these modes. So Lord Krishna says that the living entities deluded by these three modes of nature do not understand that the material background is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many different kinds of living entities. human beings, demigods, animals, etc. And each and every one of them is under the influence of material nature, and all of them have forgotten the transcendent personality of Godhead. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, and even those who are in the mode of goodness, cannot go beyond the impersonal Brahman conception of the Absolute Truth. They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord, this personal feature, which possesses all beauty, opulence, knowledge, strength, faith, and renunciation. But even those who are in goodness cannot understand what hope is there for those in passion and ignorance. Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all these three modes of material nature, and those who are truly established in Krishna consciousness are actually liberated. So, in the last verse before this, Krishna declares, I am not under the modes of material nature, for they are on the contrary by me. And now we continue, deluded by these three modes, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes of exhaustible. So he's made a categorical distinction, he's above the modes permanently, inexhaustibly. Those who are under the modes are deluded by them. With many outstanding factors, they cannot know me. It's inaccessible because of this deluding factor. So Prabhupada's first point is that the whole world is enchanted. He uses this word, enchanted, by the three modes of material nature. And we see that those who are thus enchanted and bewildered can't understand Krishna. And then referring to the human species of life, there are different ways, or basic different ways of being enchanted. The enchantment, as Prabhupada explains in the next paragraph, consists in causing the living entity to falsely identify themselves as a material body. And under the spell of the modes of material nature, there's a providing very basically four types of material bodies, and therefore four types of false identification of the body. So this refers to people who are not liberated, who are under the enchantment of the material nature. For all those people who are not liberated, who are under the modes of material nature, they cannot know Krishna. So Prabhupada then also says anyone influenced by these modes, even goodness, cannot understand Krishna. So you think that you are someone in the mode of goodness, that person can understand. But no, someone in the mode of goodness, he can go up to the impersonal conception, not to the personal conception. Just strictly working on your own out of the mode of goodness, you'll end up with the personal, impersonal conception. So even that. Well, this is Krishna's statement. Anyone deluded by the modes of material nature in four different ways, if you're a human being, you can't know him. So we find out in here, he explains how each of these modes of nature enchants the conditioned soul. Goodness, passion, ignorance, and ignorance itself, country of relationship. Sure. That's pretty straightforward. Any questions about that? Audacious claim, vision.
When we discuss Varnashram and different Varnas from Kshatriya, Vaishya Sutra, there's this tendency to think that because the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras are being influenced by the lower modes of nature, that they cannot very easily become Krishna conscious. Yet, you were presenting one that graph that showed that even though your Varna may be one of these four, the real qualification is
Well, if you become elevated in terms of Bhagavad Dharma, then you're not under the spell of the modes of material nature anymore. But you still follow Krishna's directions, which is to act according to Varna and Ashram. I mean, Krishna explains this very clearly in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There's two kinds of people, the bound and the liberated. Those are bound to perform the prescribed duties in terms of Varna and Ashram. Those who are liberated, and he gives himself as an example, perform their prescribed duties in terms of Varna and Ashram, just to set the example for the others. And of course, we know at the end of the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna is a completely liberated soul, but he's told to fight and act as a kshatriya, because that's what Krishna wants. If he disobeys Krishna, Arjuna says, think you're not going to fight because you don't like my order, you'll have to fight anyway held by the modes of nature, because that's your psychophysical nature. So you're a Maya, you're a Kshatriya, you won't be able to leave the battlefield even though you want to. And if you are transcendental, then you'll obey my instruction, which is also to stay in the battlefield, because that's his instruction. Even those who are transcendental should act in terms of Varna and Ashram.
Part of the problem in trying to establish an ashram within the community of devotees is that they think that if they get the designation, say, like a Vaishya, which are under the influence of passion, ignorance, that's what wants to be designated as all aware.
Well, either you're, it's a question of, are you under the influence of passion, ignorance, or not? Now, if you're not under the influence of passion and ignorance, then you shouldn't be designated a Vaishya. If you are under the influence of passion and ignorance, then that's what you should do. Act in that way. See, I mean, it's not that Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra are arbitrary. Follow what I'm saying?
Not really, because if you're transcendental and have become liberated,
then if you're not influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance, then there's no problem.
But you still may have the role of a Vaishya.
Yeah, but you won't care either, because you'll just be serving Krishna in that capacity.
So someone who's a Vaishya of our national system doesn't mean that he's a devotee. Is that, I mean, if he's
a devotee, some may not be devotees, right? Some may be devotees. But those who are Vaishyas and under our national government system that are following the path of bhakti yoga can become perfect doing their work by giving up the fruits of their work to Krishna. If, however, under the spell of the modes of material nature, still under the spell of modes of material nature, they think they are already free from them, and instead of acting like a Vaishya and making money and giving up the fruits to Krishna, they want to act like, say, a Brahmana, they'll have a very, very hard time performing any devotional service at all. And they'll do that work very, very badly, because it won't come naturally to them, or a kshatriya, or a shudra for that matter. See, Varnashram Dharma is simply realism. Now, we may have different life fantasies that are not compatible with realism, and a certain amount of pride, or whatever. But the point is that until one is free entirely from the mold of material nature, you should be prepared, if Prabhupada said this, to work under Varnashram Dharma. And people say, well, we're Vaishnavas, we're transcendental. And Prabhupada's reply is, are you transcendental? If you're not affected by the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, or mode of goodness, then you are transcendental. But you can't just go around rubber stamping people transcendental.
have to be with transcendental.
Then with women, they take their vana from their husband? Or are they by nature shudras? Or how do they fit?
There's a sort of the tendency, as I understand it, is to say that they are considered to have whatever vana their husband has. On the other hand, they should be married to the right kind of a husband that's suitable to them, which indicates that there's a nature to it. So. Examples of women, for example, Rukmini, was to be given in marriage to Shishupal, who was, she wanted to marry Krishna, but her brother, who didn't like Krishna, her elder brother, arranged for her marriage to Shishupal, who was Krishna's mortal enemy. So, as a dutiful daughter, she should have just gone along with the arrangement. It was made with the elder brother who talked her father into it and everything like that. But Prabhupada says that she was a princess, and true to her kshatriya nature, she decided not to take this passively. So she began to plot and scheme how to get out from under this predicament. And of course she wrote a letter to Krishna saying, I'm going to be married to this man, will you please come and kidnap me? So it indicated that because she was the daughter of a kshatriya, she had that own same nature, participated by kind of a family. So that scene. And also when I had an incident of sitting with Prabhupada in the airport in Philadelphia, and my daughter, I guess she was 6 or 7 or 8 years old at that time, maybe 6. And we just bought her all these bangs. She has had a lot of bangles like this. And I noticed her sitting there with all these bangles. They like to wear like that here too, meaning American girls, which is like Indian girls like to wear lots of bangles. She had a phenomenal view. I'd gone to India and I bought her a ton of bangles. She decided to wear all of them at once. So then he was watching her, you know, how much delight she was taking in all these bangles. And he said, you should marry her to a kshatriya. And then a little later on in the conversation, one of the devotees there asked Radhikaika to recite some Sanskrit verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam and from Bhagavad Gita. She was known in the Gurukul as their best verse memorizer. They said, you know, recite the last verse of the 4th chapter or something. She was rattled about. The Prabhupada said, better make it a Brahmana. So I hope that answers your question. But there seems to be a little more leeway. Yeah, you have to be careful about who gets married to whom.
Purely immortal Buddhists are called Brahmanas. Those are purely immortal passion are called Kshatriyas. So there seems to be this mixture in this passion, just like there's a mixture of passion and ignorance, Vaishyas category. So it seems to be sometimes.
I've never seen it discussed. Those are a mixture of goodness and passion and happiness. The arti will be at 6:30, you care to stay. At 6:30, the doors will open.
7:30.
Excuse me, 7:30.
Okay. We'll wait.
Yeah, I've never heard it discussed in any text, although I understand that there are some discussions in the place of these different...
Sometimes you see devotees with men called the Kshatriya.
Yeah, well, you see a lot of things in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada talks about, there one place in the Bhagavatam, he talks about Kshatriya-spirited Brahmanas. Referring to Parashurama in particular. And of course, he's the incarnation of God, but there can be Kshatriya. We see within, you know, you see some brahminical types who are very, very scholarly and remote and abstract, and other Brahmins may be much more practical like that. So, there are different degrees. You know, what people like Burijan is seeing in the Guru, he says people have majors and minors. Brahman major with minor Kshatriya, for example.
I had the impression that to rise to the level of transcendental knowledge that you go from the motive of goodness, yet you were saying that someone could be a Vaishya because they're transcendental, they'd still act according to that varna.
Yeah.
So how was that? It seemed like, how does a Vaishya make that leap?
To the mode of goodness?
Or, no, to transcendental knowledge without actually having...
Passing through the mode of goodness?
Yeah.
Well, I think they have to. And that's was clearly stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the effect of Bhagavata Seva, the effect of serving the pure devotee and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, is that the modes of passion and ignorance begin to disappear. And one becomes established in goodness, then in goodness you can actually understand. So you do have to be elevated to the mode of goodness. But that doesn't, as I understand it, that doesn't mean that you drop your occupational duty if you've been acting like a Vaishya all that time. And apparently because you know, you've been conditioned that way, it doesn't mean that you become suddenly unfit do that duty, but you can now do other things also that Vaishya wouldn't ordinarily do.
So I was thinking maybe the whole psychological state of being would change and that they know.
Doesn't seem to. Doesn't seem to work that way. In a sense it does, but what skills and knowledge and abilities and talents you may have developed under the modes of material nature, it's not that you lose them. If as you become a very good painter, say, under the modes of nature, which is considered to be Shudra occupation, have certain skills and learn certain things, and dedicate that to Krishna service and gradually develop a mode of goodness, it doesn't mean that I'll lose those skills and ability. Then you'll actually, in a way, you'll be teaching. If for example, And that becomes a brahminical engagement. A Brahmin can teach anything. Just like Dronacharya was a Brahmin because he taught military science. But he was on the battlefield fighting like a Kshatriya. But he was because he is the teacher of military science. So similarly, our agriculturalists, for example, they may learn how to plow with oxen and all those things to show people this is the way to be a Krishna conscious Vaishya, by plain living, high thinking. And so taking up this occupational duty as devotional service, and you teach others how to do like that, how to renounce the fruits of your work, then you're performing a rabbinical function because you're teaching these things. So if you become a teacher, then whatever you teach is a rabbinical ideal. A rabbinical occupation. Let's do one more text. Let's do text 14. This is a famous verse. Is it one of the verses that I have now to memorize? I think so. 3 and 14. Yeah, 14. This is a memorizing verse. This is an important verse. Good for preaching all the time. So let's chant the sloka. Nairihi sha gunamai.
Nairihi sha gunamai.
Maya duratyaya.
Maya duratyaya.
Mam evaye prapadyante.
Mam evaye prapadyante.
Mayam etam tarantite. Daivi, transcendental, he certainly, Esha, this Gunamayi, consisting of the three modes of material nature, Mama, my, Maya, energy, Bharatyaya, very difficult to overcome, Mam, unto me, Eva, certainly, Ye, those who, Pupadyante, surrender, Mayam, Etam, this illusory energy, Taranti, overcome, they. Translation. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Let's read it together. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So notice how this verse follows from the previous one. That deluded by the three modes, the whole world doesn't know me. When the bug knows him, inexhaustible. Then he says, this energy of mine, consisting of these three modes, is difficult to overcome. Chances are you're going to stay deluded. Very difficult. But those who have surrendered unto me, Mam Evaye, Eva means certainly, Mam Evaye Papadyante, those who have surrendered over to me, Maya Tam Tarantite, they overcome this illusory energy. Not everybody. Very difficult otherwise. Very hard. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all these energies are divine. Although the living entities are part of his energies and are therefore divine, due to contact with material energy, their original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nityabandha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. So notice the point is that to overcome the inferior energy or Maya means to have to overcome the Supreme Will, because it's by the Supreme Will that the living entities are in there. That's why you can't overcome it. That's what he's saying here. Because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. So that's stressed, this divine energy of mine. And then that, by stressing Daivi Yesha, Daivi means divine, the Krishna indicates the fact that he's controlling this energy. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows. Mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. Although Maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of Maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, supreme controller. And that's the Svetashvatara Upanishad 4.10. Another meaning of guna is rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly tied by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be held by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. Devotional service of Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Krishna, being the Lord of the illusory energy, can order this insurmountable energy to release the conditioned soul. So that's how it helps. That's how it happens. Condition. Krishna says to Maya, let him go. Otherwise, if Krishna doesn't call off Maya, nothing. Can't get out. He orders this release out of his causeless mercy on the surrendered soul and because of his paternal affection for the living entity who is originally a beloved son of the Lord. Therefore, surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is the only means to get free from the clutches of astringent material nature. Those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Because at that point Krishna says, okay, I'll call off this material nature. The words Mam Eva are also significant. Ma means unto Krishna, Vishnu only. See, Mam Eva. Of Eva Yeva Padyante, not Brahma or Shiva. Although Brahma and Shiva are greatly elevated and are almost on the level of Vishnu, it is not possible for such incarnations of Rajaguna, passion, and Tamoguna, ignorance. conditioned soul from the clutches of Maya. In other words, both Brahma and Shiva are also under the influence of Maya. Only Vishnu is the master of Maya. Therefore, he alone can give release to the conditioned soul. The Vedas, Vedashvatara Upanishad 3.8, confirm this in the phrase, Tam eva vidva, or freedom is possible only by understanding Krishna. Even Lord Shiva affirms that liberation can be achieved only by the mercy of Vishnu. Lord Shiva says, Mukti pradata sarvesham Vishnur eva asamshayaha. There is no doubt that Vishnu is the deliverer of liberation for everyone. Okay, so this is the point. The living entities cannot easily get released from material nature. Why? Because it is controlled, operating under Krishna's control. So even though it's material nature and in a sense inferior to the living entity, it is operating under Krishna's will. So you're bound a long time, nitya bada, eternally bound. Means you can't figure out where you came in. It's been a long time. It's very hard to get out. And those who are similarly bound cannot help the bound. If you're tied hands and feet, the other guy who's tied hands and feet can't release you. It's somebody who's got his digits free. So it has to be the unbound, Krishna's representative, who may can superior help, who can release. And how does that release come? By the mercy of Krishna. He sees that you're sincere in surrendering, you're sincere in performing devotional service, so he calls off the material nature. So material nature is very, very powerful. It is very strong. But in this way, you can escape, Krishna says, very easily. And then again, he stresses, Mam eva means to Krishna. The same restoration is not available from the incarnation in the mode of passion, Brahma, the incarnation of ignorance. Sure, they're not in a position to release the conditioned souls. And the bonds of illusion, the element comes from Vishnu alone. There's the main parts of that purport. Questions?
Yeah. How is it that Shiva is under the influence of Maya? He's an expansion of Krishna.
Yeah, he is an expansion of Krishna, and it's not exactly that he's in Maya. It is not we're always in Maya, but just that when you approach Lord Shiva, he's surrounded by the mode of ignorance, so that it's very hard to get close to Lord Shiva without also getting messed up with the mode of ignorance. It's like that. A lot of bad association. Buddhas, pretas, pishchalas, all these are Lord Shiva's associates. It's very difficult. Of course, Shiva can also be approached as the representative of Vishnu, but there is the Rupa Sampradaya. But then you're not approaching Krishna, Shiva, for release. You're approaching Krishna, and Shiva is acting as his devotee. So in that case, you're not involved in the mode of ignorance. But if he's approached directly, it is as the lord of material nature, master of the mode of ignorance, and so you tend to get mixed up. Yes, Lord Shiva is difficult to understand. Actually, so is Krishna.
In his own category.
Yeah, there's a Shiva Tattva. Because the example is he's an expansion of Krishna, but he's like, milk and curd. Is that right? Milk and yogurt.
Milk coming in contact. contact with town.
That's another example. That's you, but it's not that he actually comes in, not that he act, but he's a kind of chance. It says you can't get the same function out of prayer that you use with milk. So that the same restorative power is not available to you of Shiva, that's available for Vishnu. But I mean, here he says, Shiva is also the influence of Maya. But in other places, we find that Shiva is not only the influence of Maya, so that's what makes it very difficult. And having looked at these for a long time, my opinion is that it's as if Shiva is under the influence of Maya. Very hard. You cannot approach Lord Shiva without becoming complicated. And this will be discussed later on in this chapter about those who approach Anya Devata, other gods, Vishnu, so discuss what happens to them, what the drawbacks and problems are with the people that do so. And Anya Devata means Brahma, Shiva, Chandra, Surya, that's later on. Is there any other questions about that?
What stage of devotional service is Krishna called with Maya?
Pardon?
What stage of devotional service is Krishna called with Maya?
So what stage of devotional service is...
Does Krishna call off Maya?
Does Krishna call off Maya? Well, he starts calling off Maya right away. Sense that a gradual withdrawal of wounds and passion.
But we still are being tested, so.
Yeah.
So we're still being.
Yeah, so there's still some mind. And as you surrender to him, he calls off mind. The more you can completely agree to be controlled by Krishna, then you, at that degree, not be controlled by material nature. So the stage of devotional service is when Maya is completely gone, is the stage that is complete surrender. When you're fixed in Krishna consciousness, this stuff is influenced by material nature. Free from all the dirty things in the heart, passion, fear, and human goodness.
Wouldn't you have to say be prema? Because even
well, you can become outside the modes of influence of material nature and also fall down. From that position because you're still not fully.
That means you're submerged.
That means that you're susceptible to Maya, that you're given that under that power. As I understand it, at least the analysis of Adho Shraddha that I've seen, notion is that the Brahma-Bhuta stage arrives at the stage of Nishta. That has been disputed by others who say that liberation doesn't actually take place until, not Prema, but Bhava.
Right.
Because, or no, not even Bhava, Asakti. Because Asakti actually find out your spiritual identity as a resident of Vermont. So someone made that claim. But that one kind of becomes a technical dispute to my mind. But at the stage of Nishta, you're pretty well out under. And there may be some subtle susceptibility possible. At that point, being firmly fixed in devotional service, no obvious influence in my life. Maybe some very subtle things. It's like one can be liberated and be in the position of Vermont and still fall down in that position. It doesn't mean that once you're liberated, you're not You say you're liberated from how the material energy affects you. But somehow or other you can become still attracted to material energy. You're liberated platform. But then you're firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness by asakti, which I mean is nishta, which means fixed, and asakti, which means addicted. Is asakti, strong attachment, then very rare. So liberated doesn't necessarily mean not capable of losing your position. We will stop it.